From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Pinole, California.
Santa Clara.
I'm from Fremont.
Pacifica, California.
Pleasanton.
Oh. From Vallejo.
Me from Enya.
Coming up, we'll meet a man as he gets ready to be released from prison after 29 years.
As opposed to when I left, society, in my opinion, seems to be moving a lot faster. Society seems to be somewhat possessed by their possessions, meaning that it's materialistic driven to a certain point.
Then we'll find out what life is like once he's actually out.
As I walked down the street, I was so elated to be out. It's like I want to say hi to everybody.
And we'll celebrate the 80th anniversary of Coit Tower as we look at its pictorial history of San Francisco during the Great Depression.
If you really want to understand the history of California, you go look at the murals.
That's all coming up on Cross Currents. Today, we're bringing you another story from the San Quentin Prison Report, KALW's collaboration with inmates making radio from inside of California's oldest prison.
The San Quentin Prison Report.
SQPR is a media collective of prisoners and volunteers from the community working together to give voice to personal growth, social transformation, and restorative justice.
SQPR.
Our mission is to create documentaries, films, and audio programs that broaden and challenge the conversation around crime, punishment, and rehabilitation in the United States.
Marcus Williams went to prison when he was 17 years old. It was 1984. Miami Vice and The Cosby Show were the hottest things on TV. Run-DMC and Curtis Blow were the reigning kings of hip-hop.
Clap your hands, everybody, if you got what it takes. Because I'm Curtis Blow, and I want you to know that these are the breaks.
29 years later, Marcus is about to get out on parole. He's matured a lot since he got to prison. But even after all of this time, he says there are still a few things he's working on.
Being able to trust people. That is something I had been struggling with for quite some time, and I took that from my childhood out there in here, and to be honest with you, I'm still struggling with that right now today.
Marcus shared his story with SQPR's Shaw Wallace Stepter. And a heads up as you're listening, the media lab at San Quentin is in the old laundry facility, and every so often the rusty pipes make noises that you'll hear. Here's Shaw.
Well, Marcus reflects on who he was as a young man. He's quick to point out what it was about him that got him in trouble.
I was very self-centered. It was all about me, type of mentality. My childhood was so rough, so therefore the world owes me everything, and I'm going to get it any way I see fit.
Even if that meant using violence.
I never went anywhere without a gun because I knew that in some form or fashion, people were going to test me in certain ways that was going to be detrimental to my health. So it was like it was that whole F the world type of mentality, man.
This mentality would lead Marcus to get involved with gangs. And at the age of 16, he was arrested for first-degree murder. And by the age of 17, sentenced to life in prison. Unfortunately for Marcus, his introduction into the prison system began with a lesson that would almost kill him.
Within the first year, I had an attempt on my life. Within the first 6 months, I almost got put into a wheelchair.
Marcus says he was the victim of a brutal attack by rival gang members while he was lifting weights with other inmates.
Me and one dude, so-called homeboy, we doing what is called 21. You take a light boy, you do 7 reps, you give him the boy after 7 reps, he gives them back to you. So after about the second time, after I hand them back to him, next thing I know, I just get pummeled with 80-pound dumbbells, man. And I see dudes all over me, but the dude in front of me take off running, and he's over there on the ground with his jacket over his head. If I wanted to run, I couldn't. There was nothing I could do. I tried to defend myself on my back, but there was nothing I could do. I got a weight bench thrown on me after that.
After the attack, Marcus was sent to administrative segregation, also known as the hole. After a year in the hole, he was transferred to another prison.
When I got to Folsom, Folsom was already on lockdown. There was already a war between two races, so we spent about 8 months on lockdown.
That means inmates are confined to their cells for 23 hours a day, and all inmate movement is restricted unless under direct escort by guards. This gave Marcus a lot of alone time, and he says something started shifting in him.
I just had a lot of time to think, so I started becoming somewhat of a loner, you know what I'm saying? So The majority of my time, my first 2 years, it was just focused on me handling my own. And like I was saying, it was all about self-preservation. So the best way that I can survive is just start subtracting these dudes, regardless of how long I've known them. Just start staying away from them. I pick and choose who I want to talk to, but after a certain amount of time, I got to let you go your way, I got to go mine.
This was a turning point for Marcus, but influences from the outside world would ultimately have the biggest impact on him.
One thing that frustrates us being in prison, anybody, is that you don't have control over certain situations that takes place outside of these walls.
Family tragedies forced Marcus to reflect. His cousin was murdered, and within 2 weeks, a dear aunt passed away. For the first time, he would think about what type of future he would have when he got out of prison.
The one thing that I'm really starting to fear is that if I get out of here, everybody that I love is going to be gone.
At this point, Marcus's main priority became working on himself in order to become a better person so he could be there for his family. He started participating in self-help groups, and he says he committed himself to personal growth and change. He was transferred from Folsom to San Quentin, and at San Quentin, Marcus noticed something at this prison that he found to be very important. Something he had never experienced anywhere else.
There's a community support within the guys in Blow, and you're not going to find that in too many other places. I can't speak for any other place, but here you have a profound network of guys that support you through and through, and I've never seen that in all my years in this institution.
That support, along with all the programs offered at San Quentin, programs like No More Tears, Alliance for Change, and the Prison University Project, helped Marcus to learn from his past mistakes. During his nearly 3 decades in prison, Marcus had been before the parole board and denied on 4 separate occasions. But in 2012, he had another chance to convince the board, and this time they saw something in Marcus that was different.
Well, I changed my thinking process. They didn't see that gang member. They didn't see that person that had caused all this trouble out there in the community, especially at the junior highs, which is where my crime took place. They didn't see a gang member sitting before them coming in there with all these issues, with this frown upon his face. They seen somebody who was still somewhat troubled, but at the same time did everything he could and within his power to change his life the best he could.
Now, after 29 years, Marcus is set to be released from prison. And a lot has changed since Marcus was last out.
As opposed to when I left, society, in my opinion, seems to be moving a lot faster. Society seems to be somewhat possessed by their possessions, meaning that it's materialistic driven to a certain point.
To cope with this, Marcus has a simple plan.
Patience, 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 and I'm saying it because nothing is going to get handed to me on a silver platter. I'm just going to, I got my work cut out for me. And the one thing that I've learned is that if I didn't want to go to school, if I didn't want to work in here, if I didn't want to do anything, the one thing that I was going to learn is patience. And that's what it's going to take. And it's going to take diligence. And it's going to take me being focused and I have to not allow myself to get sidetracked by some things that I know that are going to come my way, because it's going to be rough at first. I know that. So it's going to take a whole lot of self-discipline as well. So,
to the man that Marcus is leaving behind at San Quentin, he leaves this final message:
stay strong, be strong, stay self-disciplined, keep your head up, man, and live your life to the fullest, man, and do not give up, man. Do not give up. I love y'all, man.
Reporting from San Quentin State Prison, I'm Shaw Wallace Stepter for SQPR.
The San Quentin Prison Report is a partnership with KALW to bring stories from inside of California's oldest prison to the public radio airwaves. Tune in next week for another report from San Quentin. A former gang member shares how his thinking shifted after he went to prison.
If I can do it over again, I would have listened to a lot of the police that was telling me stuff for my own good. I would have listened to a lot of the older ladies in their rocking chairs that led up and down the street from my grandmother. I would have listened to my grandmother.
The San Quentin Prison Report is produced by founding director Troy Williams and managing director Nigel Poor. The SQPR production team includes reporters Tommy Shakur Ross, Shaw Wallace Stepter, Greg Eskridge, and production assistant Shireen Garcia. SQPR is made possible by the support of Warden Kevin Chappelle, Public Information Officer Lieutenant Sam Robinson, TV Specialist Larry Schneider, and KALW News Director Holly Kernan.
Listening to Cross Currents from KALW News, I'm Holly Kernan. We just heard from Marcus Williams as he prepared himself for release from prison. Marcus was paroled last spring, and he joins me now from Oakland, where he's been living. Marcus, you were in prison for almost 30 years. Go back and tell us about your first day out.
Oh, first day out was one of culture shock. You know, you simply walk down the street and you see so many people on their devices. It's like everybody was connected to something. And as I walked down the street, I was so elated to be out. It's like I wanted to say hi to everybody, but everybody was like connected to the devices in some form or fashion. You even had people that seemed to me that they were homeless. They even were connected to some form of device, and I was just like, wow. So for me, it was just culture shock and one of just simple happiness and enjoyment that I was back in society.
Yeah, it's funny because it happened so gradually that everybody started having these appendages, their cell phone connected, that we don't notice it necessarily. But I imagine for you, it must have just been like an alien planet.
Oh, yes, it was. And I was asking myself after a certain period of time, would I also fit into that category? So, yeah.
And what else has surprised you about life on the outside after 3 decades inside of California's prison?
I think what else surprised me is how you have so many people taking some of the smaller things in life for granted, you know?
Like what?
And, well, there are a lot of restaurants out in Berkeley, and I will see some people, you know, they will be out enjoying their meals. And for me, I'm just getting out trying to get familiar with the area, and I will see people eating food, but then throwing away. It's like they're taking 2 or 3 bites off and just throwing it away when you have people out here on the streets that will give their right or left arm for a portion of what this person just threw away, you know? And for me, it was just some of the smaller things like that it really upset me, but at the same time, it made me appreciate what I have, which what I have right now is not that much. It just made me appreciate that more, you know?
And where are you living now, Marcus?
Right now, I'm living in North Oakland.
And you're living in transitional housing?
Yes, ma'am.
And are you working as well?
Yes, ma'am. I have a part-time job at Shotgun Players, which is a place where they do a lot of plays, a lot of stage plays, and I get paid $13 an hour. I know it's not that much, but it is something. And I'm also I'm taking 10 units at Merritt Community College, and I have somebody put me out on Facebook where, you know, I do like little side jobs like line work, like if people need to move, like if they need to car wash. It's just little in-between jobs that will, you know, put a little money in my pocket. So.
And what's your biggest challenge, do you think, transitioning from San Quentin to Berkeley, Oakland?
Wow. I believe that my biggest challenge is just having people being receptive to me coming out into society, reintegrating into society, and being able to say, you know what, I'm going to give this guy a chance despite of what he done in his past. I think just having an opportunity to prove who I say I am. So, yeah. No, I think for me, it would just really mean a lot to me if people would treat me like a human being. because, you know, in so many cases, you know, when you're in prison, you know, prison is not made to motivate you. It's made to discourage you. So therefore, they treat you a certain way where, you know, they try to dehumanize you in every shape or form, and they don't treat you like you're a human. They treat you like a number. And I think the most important thing to me is that people treat me like a human being. And that is one of the most amazing things that I've experienced since I've been out.
Was that a hard thing to transition to, that, you know, going from the prisoner mentality where you don't have a lot of control over your life to, you know, nobody knows just by looking at you that you were in prison for 30 years?
Oh, I am so glad you said that. And that plays, yes, it played a very big part on my psyche, because when you're in a prison environment, you're taught, you have to retrain yourself how to think based on the environment and the conditions that you're living in. But I realized that once I got out, I had to retrain myself how to think. And just to give you an example, once I started walking down the street, just to get familiar with the area, I would look at the cars passing by, people walking down the street. For those that would take the opportunity to make eye contact with me, I was like, man, do they know that I'm just getting out of prison? Why are they looking at me like that? Well, it just took me to, it was all on me to just retrain myself how to think.
And Marcus, what are your dreams? What do you want to be doing in 5 years? Where do you see yourself?
What I want to be doing, I want to be working in a full-time job. I would love to have a nice house, apartment, a beautiful wife, and, you know, some amazing kids. You know, regardless, you know, I'm kind of getting up in age. I don't know if I'm able to make any more right now, but I'm willing to adopt children. Even if I meet someone who has two or three kids, you know, it doesn't make a difference. You know, just a happy home, you know, and just living a productive life.
So, Marcus, you said you wanted to say thank you to somebody. Go ahead and say thank you to Corey right now.
Corey Wynn, I want to say thank you. You are an amazing person, and I wish you all the best. I hope you're listening, and I just wish you all the best, and stay focused and determined, and you will achieve every goal that you talk to me about, okay? All right.
That's Marcus Williams, who was released from San Quentin last spring. He's one of about 24,000 inmates who were released on parole from California prisons in the past year. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Last week marked the 80th birthday of one of San Francisco's grandest landmarks, Coit Tower. Inside the iconic structure are several colorful murals depicting themes of labor and life in California during the Great Depression. A group of master artists went to work on these murals in 1934 as part of the Public Works of Art project. This was a precursor to the Works Progress Administration, part of the federal government's effort to put people back to work. That was also the year of the controversial West Coast waterfront strike, which helped usher in the U.S. organized labor movement.
Efforts of business interests to forcibly open the strike-paralyzed port of San Francisco fail. Open warfare rages through the streets of the city as 3,000 Union pickets battle 700 police. Guns, tear gas, clubs...
Violence broke out during the strike and caused controversy over the radical content in some of the murals. Some of the most contentious scenes were even painted over. One of the tower artists was Bernard Zackheim. His daughter, Ruth Gottstein, remembers the strike in this interview with San Francisco StoryCorps.
My father said to me, "You have to see what a city looks like under a general strike." It was an astonishing sight. There was not a soul on the street. When we reached 3rd and Market, around the corner came an open-bed truck with young guys. They looked like they were in 16 and 17. They all looked petrified. They were clutching rifles. I believe they were the National Guard brought in to guard the city.
2,500 guardsmen move in, commanded by Colonel Mittelstate.
The California National Guard has been ordered into active service by our governor for the purpose of maintaining law and order in San Francisco.
If you really want to understand the history of California, you go look at the murals. These artists were not only able to picture them, but they did their homework. And it's a message to our own children, to the children growing up in San Francisco who can go up there and look at it and say, wow, look at when this was done.
That's Ruth Gottstein, who's the daughter of Bernard Zachheim, one of the Coit Tower muralists. Her StoryCorps interview was edited by KALW's Jasmine Lopez. Again, Coit Tower is celebrating its 80th anniversary this year. You can find more information about this San Francisco landmark and about StoryCorps at KALW.org. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Hana Ababa, Rebecca Burungi, Julie Kane, Jen Chien, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Daniel Moore, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Nina Gensler-Debs, Liz Mack, Mary Reese, Daphne Matsuraki, Stephen Short, and Rachel Wong. Today's show was expertly engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And thanks to you, KALW is independent, non-commercial, listener-supported public radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll visit one of the Bay Area's oldest juvenile rehabilitation centers, built in 1957.
Cap Sweeney sucks. But everybody here is so lovely.
A visit to Camp Sweeney in San Leandro. That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. The band you're hearing now is called Lucas Ohio and the Shamblers. Lead singer Lucas Ohio grew up in the East Bay. The band has opened for a number of big names and is now on its way to making their own name better known. You can see them at the Empress Theater in downtown Vallejo two nights from now as part of the theater's ongoing Wednesday night ramble. Music starts about 7 p.m. For more information or to hear more local music, visit our website. It's KALW.org. That's also where you can subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.
Burn the freight ends, let's call it a night. Cause I'm about to fall like Stonehenge. What a sight. They say if you love someone, you'll set them free. Maybe.